And then finally, one of our pharmacy professors has been named in the top 25 as one of the top 25 pharmacy professors in the nation. Her name is Dr. Carmita Coleman. I don't know if she's present today, but Dean Marion Mobley Smith is, and I'd like for the board and for everyone to please acknowledge that honor. Thank you. Well, please give her our congratulations. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions from board members? All right.
Okay.
We'll hear from.
Thank you.
From enrollment management update, Ms. Sherry Sidney.
Good morning, Chairman Young, trustees.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Sherry Sidney, Associate Vice President of Enrollment Management. I'd like to provide a brief report on the spring enrollment for 2015. As of the census date, which was February 13th, university enrollment for spring stands at 4,818 students. That is a decline of 9% compared to this point in time last year, which equates to 457 students. Undergraduate students represent approximately 74% of the university's enrollment at 3,554 students, while the remaining 26%, 1,264, encompasses our graduate students. While we did suffer a decline in enrollment, I do want to talk about some of the increases and wins that we had, specifically related to our graduate programs and Dr. Carney's efforts. Graduate student enrollment is on the rise, and spring 15 noted a 6% overall increase. Some of our graduate programs have increased student enrollment compared to spring 13 or spring 14 includes educational leadership, occupational therapy, and public health, as well as computer science, which was up by 33%. And obviously, some of the things that you heard in the academic affairs is reflected in these numbers. The efforts by Dr. Atelli, Dr. Satasha Green, and the collaboration of the university overall as we change our mission and how we enroll students or recruit students. We all know about the internal and external factors that have impacted enrollment. We've also discussed in depth that the university has decided to go for quality versus quantity. I've asked John Martinez to join me at the desk today. John Martinez is our Associate Director of Admissions and has been with the university for 27 years. I'd like John to share with you a different perspective about the enrollment at Chicago State University.
As AVP mentioned, I have been here for quite a while, and I've seen our students come from different areas, and we've always initially 15 years, we banked on CPS, and obviously demographics have changed over the years. And one thing that comes to mind is we're obviously at PBI, and there's no changing that. 80% of our students are African American. The demographics that I speak of are the Latino students that are, you know, filling the schools and at Curie High School, at Hubbard High School, at Kelly High School. And some of those students, not to say that they're not welcomed here, but feel unwelcome. They just don't know about CSU. But once they do arrive, they're like, wow, home at CSU. So those are things that we're looking at. We're looking at bringing in more students. And also, one other aspect of why students aren't enrolling at CSU is that they have tons of choices. They can go on the internet and pull a school up in Washington, in Florida, whereas in years past, you know, this was a school of choice. So we're making every effort. We've partnered with Chegg, one of our vendors, sending out recruitment flyers, talking to students, calling them, and encouraging them to apply. And once they apply, following up with them. And did you want to share something else?
Well, basically what I want to share in relation to your comment, Chairman, at the other pre-board meeting, is what are our strategies? And that's what we're working on collaboratively as a university, and redefining our target areas, working together to make enrollment, again, a university initiative, not just a one department. As the demographics in the area have changed, as we have to expand our reach, and we have to change. So that's something we're doing. We are implementing strategies, target areas, goals that will allow us to recruit a better class for fall 2015. Any questions?
Well, you know my question, Ms. Sidney, which I've asked you. And I think everybody has the right to hear your answer, but for 3 or 4 years in a row now, enrollment has declined every single semester. There were some good reasons in the beginning in terms of what's going on in Washington and the university's change in the procedure and the qualifications of the students it accepts. And there were some understandable hits, but we've taken those hits. And enrollment still continues to slide. And what I think everybody likes to know is, when do you anticipate the decline stopping?
So as we put, education is a competitive business. As Mr. Martinez stated, we have to be competitive. And with that comes creating new programs, new opportunities. We know, as Provost has stated previously, that we have opportunities with our online community. Students are looking to be educated in a different way, and we have to work towards giving them what they want. So as we implement those things, and as we communicate those things to our public, we expect our enrollment to grow. And I think a direct example of that is what Dr. Atelli has done with our international recruitment. We identified an area. He went out there, and the international student enrollment has grown. We need to implement those programs that our students are looking for, and we have to expand our demographic reach. So when will the programs grow? They are growing. It's not going to happen overnight, but if we look at our data program by program, initiative by initiative, I think we see some wins. And I think we need to acknowledge those increases, because I think everybody is working hard towards them.
It's hard to think about or even recognize what you call wins. Mm-hmm. To me, a win will be when you come and say enrollment did not decline this semester. And mm-hmm. I think it's enrollment management owes the university at least your forecast. When is that day going to come when enrollment hasn't declined this semester? I'm deliberately putting you on the spot, because I think that's one of the things you should be doing. You should set a date and say, on this semester, our enrollment is not going to decline.
And if I can add, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me as well it should be some kind of written strategy in place. You know, these are the targets. These are the numbers that we expect from year to year. And as Chairman said, what year we actually see an increase instead of a decline. I mean, that seems like that should be a written strategy or forecast.
And it is. We work with IER and Finance and Administration to project. I will ask the directors in those areas to share that information with the board. But as far as an answer right now, I can't give you a specific fall 15, we will see an increase of. I can't project that at this point. We are projecting flat.
I'm not even asking for an increase. I'm asking for no decrease.
We are projecting flat for fall 15.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to ask a question also. Maybe it's congruent with what you're talking about. Can you cite for us the last 3 years, what has been the rate of graduation for our students? Has it changed?
Averaged 20% in the last 3 years. This current reporting year, it is 19%. The previous 2 years is 21%. Increase from 14% 4 years ago.
I think it's important for us to I agree with the board members' comments, but, you know, again, you have to look at the whole picture. And if we're graduating more students, 20% more students than we did before. I think the increase was from 14 to 20%. Right. You know, at least it shows you that there is not just words about quality. It's one thing to enroll a student, but the key is graduation rates and people getting degrees. So I'm in lockstep with the board members concerned about the enrollment. We have to really work on that and get it up, but also to make sure that we are graduating students with degrees that are workable in this environment. And I think that we have to kind of balance our comments with that as well.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. And I know that enrollment is very important. Statistically, based upon the visits to Hubbard, Curie, and the schools, and Pete visiting Daly College, and all of the heritage parades in South Chicago and Little Village, what are the statistics for those students that are enrolling? Because I remember going to both parades in South Chicago and Little Village, and when those parents saw me with my CSU gear on, they were very excited. And they want their students, they want their children to come here to Chicago State, you know, with the Latino Resource Center and all that in place. What are our statistics relative to those students for recruitment?
I can't answer that right now, but I can provide that for you later.
Please do.
Sure.
If I may offer just a comment toward that, Hispanic enrollment is up 3%.
Good, very good.
Any other questions from board members?
I was troubled by the quantity over quality, or quality over quantity. That seems to be the philosophy that governs you. Is that something that you are led to that philosophy, or you feel that that is the most effective way that we should approach this business of enrollment? I'm just a little troubled by the quantity over quality. I think we got to get these kids here and then deal with them once we get, and we have to have the programs in place to keep them when we get them, but we've got to have a hold our hands out and try to get these kids from wherever we can. And so I'm just concerned about that. How did we approach that philosophy?
So the university does have programs that admit students who aren't quite prepared for college level work, and that's our university college. We want to ensure that those students succeed, but it also, we have to look at the reality of the situation. It does cost the university more to keep those students. More programs have to be put in place. And while we have the programs, we have the programs, the students also have other alternatives. We aren't turning people away who meet our standards or who are ready to succeed. We have programs to help students at all levels, but quality versus quantity is about the university also adhering to its academic standards. And we can't let, not that we can't, but there are federal rules that mandate how students are paying for college. If they're using financial aid and they don't meet the standards of those eligibility, then how do they pay for college? So it works both ways. It's about the financial challenges they have as well as the academic preparedness in which they come into the university with. We're able to help them on both fronts, but only up to a certain degree.
Can I just make one comment? And historically, our students who come in unprepared, they don't come back that following fall semester, and that hurts the university because we're often measured on our retention rates for those students.
And I would add, Mr. Chairman, it hurts the student as well. I mean, if they're not able to succeed once they get here, then we've kind of wasted some of their time. And there are city college programs for the students who would need a lot more support than we perhaps could give.
And we do provide warm transfers for those students that may think they want to come to Chicago State but aren't quite ready. We stay engaged with them. We provide warm transfers because of our relationships with city colleges or other community colleges. And then we keep in touch with them and invite them back once they have elevated their academics.
And Mr. Chair, I must say to Trustee Hatch, we provide the best tutoring, mentoring. We have it all here at Chicago State. So we do very well in that area.
Any further comments from board members? Thank you, Ms. Sidney and John Martinez. Thank you very much. Now we're going to hear some good news from Farah.
Good morning, trustees. Farah Muscadet, interim dean of students. I'm going to be brief. I just wanted to talk about some highlights. We had a fantastic month-long program to celebrate Black History Month. And our closing ceremony, we brought in a celebrity that the students wanted. He is a rapper, actor, activist. His name is David Banner. And we had the closing ceremony here in the library and had over 300, they were mostly students, participate and show up to hear him speak. That was really major for student affairs and for the university. He obviously social media is huge, so he trended on his Twitter and Instagram and on his Facebook page that he was coming to Chicago State. So it was great. And before he performed, he gave a great speech. Our students performed. We have a new organization on campus called Word Up that does spoken word poetry, and it was six students who wrote original piece. Because the theme was We Will Breathe, and it blew me away. It was fantastic. So we do have it recorded. I will share it with you, just so you see the talent that we have at this university. It was just unbelievable. The next thing is we've been talking a lot about collaboration amongst the university, and one thing that I felt very strongly of is that we generally wrap our arms around all our students, but I wanted to wrap our arms a little bit more around our international students. Because I wanted them to feel even more welcomed at Chicago State. And so with the help of Provost and Dr. Carney and Dr. Attali, we reached out to our international students I wanted them to know who I am. I wanted them to know about student affairs and work together. And so that they have an additional resource on this campus in addition to international programs. So we want all our students, every last one of them, no matter where they come from, to feel that they are welcomed. And so we're making a little bit more effort to reach out to our international students. Today, actually, our Indian students are doing an activity in our student union painting to celebrate an Indian festival. And so we want to support that, and we want to ensure that our students are exposed to all the cultures we have on campus. We definitely have an international community here, and we want all our students to see that and be exposed to it. The next thing that I wanted to bring up is, hopefully you saw in your packet, the Cougar Call. This is a new newsletter that we created. It came out of the Student Advisory Council that I created, where I meet with students, and they said, we want a different way of finding out what's going on campus. We want to know when the student groups are meeting. And so we were trying to figure out how exactly to do that, and so we came up with the Cougar Call. And so we send out this newsletter every Monday. Hopefully students anticipate it and look forward to it. It's still a work in progress, but we started it out this semester in January. And so I think it's been a huge success, and we hope to expand it and make it more interactive. And then lastly is the Cougar Closet. This is amazing. Our campus community, I'm just so proud and honored to be a part of it. When I sent out the call asking for professional, gently used clothes, they heard the call and answered. My office is filled with clothes, I mean top to bottom. And so that just really made me really appreciative of being here, because we have a campus community that supports our students. So our students are going to be prepared from head to toe for these job fairs that are lining up. We have one next week, we have a couple in April, and I'm just thrilled to report to the board that they will be sharp as can be with their suits, some of them brand new. They will have a portfolio. Everyone participating will have a portfolio to put their resume in, and they will also have interviewing, resume writing, cover letter tips in a packet that we're preparing from Career Development to give them more information on how to get a job. So we are doing the best that we can, but I just want to publicly say thank you to our campus community for donating the clothes. It was fantastic turnout. And that concludes my report.
My compliments on the Cougar Call. It's very colorful. I think it would be hard for a student to walk past a copy of it and not be drawn to it. And the message in there is repeated. Check your emails. Check your emails. Because that's where the information is.
Yeah, we're trying. Yeah.
Thank you, Farrah.
Thank you,
Justin. Any comments from board members? Thank you. That concludes the academic affairs portion of the meeting.
Next, we'll hear from Finance and Audit. Trustee Zoller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pinkleton, if you will come up to give us information. And then we do have action items also.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Madam Trustee, distinguished trustees. For the record, my name is Larry Pinkleton, Interim Vice President, Administration and Finance for Chicago State University. What's coming down the dais right now is a summary of the university's cash position, which I'd like to briefly review. The current cash position within our banks currently stands at $22 million approximately. Looking at our restricted cash balances and the projects that we've got to support, the dollars that we've got to support those projects, we have a unrestricted cash balance of approximately $18.9 million. Looking at activity that we expect to take place over the next 90 days, looking at our collections, which starts with our state reimbursements, we're guesstimating $9 million to come from the state over the next 3 months, which would bring our projected collections to approximately $19.9 million. In that same time period, in terms of expenditures, starting with payroll being the most significant, we're looking at projected expenditures of approximately $26.7 million. And if we factor in our unrestricted cash, looking at factoring in also our collections and our projected expenditures, we will have a balance of approximately $12.2 million. In the event that we were to run into any fiscal challenges coming from the state, we anticipate still being in the positive with a balance of $3.2 million, although the state has been paying fairly consistently over the last several months. Looking at our state appropriation status, where we are at month eight throughout the course of the year, as we know, our state appropriation is $39.1 million. Payments received year to date total approximately $19.2 million, which represents 49% of our state appropriation, suggesting that the balance due from the state is approximately $19.8 million, or 51% remaining. We continue the aggressive policy of trying to bill the state for expenses that we have incurred year to date, and we've billed approximately 71% of our budget to the state at this stage of the game, which compares very nicely with where we stood this time last year at 68%. Any questions concerning the university's cash position or the status of our state appropriation?
Are you expecting to have received 100% of the state appropriation on or before the end of the fiscal year?
No, I'm not. History does not suggest that the state maintains a 12-month cycle. More often than not, over the last 3 years, it's generally been in the October-November time period before the state has completely fulfilled all of their obligations for our state appropriation. And so this is one of the things why we need to be very mindful of the university's cash position so that we can manage through that dynamic.
So how low do our cash reserves get during that period going toward October when we haven't received the total appropriation?
Well, we're talking about a pattern here, Mr. Yes. Chairman, that the university has, you know, established the appropriate amount of infrastructure to handle. And so even though the state has this pattern of delayed reimbursement, we are able to maintain ongoing operations by aggressively managing our cash flow. We look at vendor payments, we look at the frequency and the dollar amount of our cash outflows. And so as I sit here today, I do not anticipate the university not being able to maintain operations even though the state has historically been delinquent or slow in their reimbursements.
Do you expect us to receive 100% of the appropriation eventually, even though it's October? Or I heard the other day talk about a give back.
Okay, you've opened up a can of worms here, sir, so I will try to be as brief as I can in that comment, my response here. We have been navigating for the past several months through various overtures that have come in from the new governor around his view of the financial support that will be offered to institutions of higher education. Part of that messaging has included a request for the state universities to provide what's referred to as a rescission. Okay, a rescission in layman terms basically means that if our state appropriation was one number, in this case it's $39.1 million, the state is going to not allow us to reimburse, not provide reimbursement for some number. Okay, process-wise, what has transpired to date is they asked for our voluntary response on how much we would be prepared to allow them not to reimburse us for, okay? A voluntary response. And this is consistent with what has played out across the entire state. Every state institution participated in this question, in this process. And so we responded to that request. We volunteered $195,000 and change. And at this point, that number has been accepted. We are reasonably optimistic that it will not increase, although the jury is still out because there's still 4 months left in the year. And so we're positioned as well as we can for the prospect of an additional request, but at this point we do not expect it to grow. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I hate to point out the obvious, but you know, we sit here and talk about enrollment to increase it, and then you decrease the funds. I think we're living in a fantasy world. I'm sure that there are ways to be more effective with our dollars, and we have to do that, but it seems to me incongruent to hold people's feet to the fire about enrollment, knowing you must produce dollars to support students, and then you cut the budget. So unless we're being inefficient with our dollars, I think that we're going to have to look long and hard about what the chairman talked about. You know, when will we have these zero decrease? I want that too. But I live in a real world where I live in, and you have to pay for what you want. Mm-hmm. So unless we're being inefficient, I think we're gonna have to look at what we're talking about when we say decrease educational dollars. I think I understand the state's in trouble, but again, you can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. So I wanna go on record to say that we need to support our educational institution with our dollars, not with rhetoric, but with money.
Thank you.
Well, if I may, Dr. Smith, that's one of the reasons enrollment plays so heavily on my mind, because I see a connection between the two. And when we get one level of appropriation from the state, when we have 7,000 students, I think it's hard to justify asking for that same level of appropriation with 4,800 students. And so far, our enrollment decline hasn't hurt us, and I'm fearful that if it keeps declining, it'll have a financial effect in terms of what we receive from the state.
Thank you.
Mr. Pinkleton, while we've opened up the can of worms, what's the 31.5% cut that we keep hearing about?
The governor has recently announced his planned budget for fiscal year 16. In his budget address, he shared his vision for how the state would respond to their fiscal challenges. part of his vision represents a 31.5% cut in institutional support, in higher education and institutional support across the state. For Chicago State University, that translates into approximately $12 million. Our position is that that would be crippling to this institution. I know that that response is shared by the president and all the other presidents across the state. And so there are a lot of efforts that are underway to help the governor understand that that number is too big relative to ongoing operations. And so as we push through that timeline where this negotiation, I'll call it, goes back and forth, we are optimistic that the number will be something less than 31.5%. But we don't expect it to be zero. And because we don't expect it to be zero, the university's administration in support with leaders across the campus has been actively engaged in trying to identify strategies that will help us bring forth the appropriate amount of cost reduction in some combination with revenue enhancement where we feel that's appropriate, which will still allow the university to maintain ongoing operations.
Thank you. Are there any questions about that from the board? Thank you, Mr. Pinkleton.
Okay. Moving on, I do have five resolutions I'd like to bring to the Board of Trustees' attention. Trustee Zolar, would you like to take these resolutions en masse or one at a time?
One at a time, please. I'd like the e-procurement maintenance first.
Our first resolution for the board's consideration is for e-procurement maintenance. This is basically the system that undergirds the university's procurement process. And so as we look to ensure the ongoing functionality of the university's procurement process, we are requesting the authority to exercise a renewal option for the state's contract, for the CSU's contract that supports the university's procurement process. The value of that contract over the next 3 years is approximately $307,000, and so we're asking for your authority to exercise the renewal option of the contract, which is currently in place.
Are there any questions regarding this?
Yes, Trustee Zoller. I would like to ask Larry Pinkleton, concerning the software, you and Prashant Shinde, will this software better the Wi-Fi connection through Maru with students here on campus?
Point of clarification, the software that I'm speaking of in support of e-procurement is not part of the mandatory fee discussion. That's a separate subject.
The software, reflecting upon the software, sir.
And this is actually, Madam Trustee, this is actually software maintenance. It's our contract to maintain the software that we do have. It will not enhance anything.
For e-procurement.
Okay.
Right.
The university has a procurement system which we refer to as CSU Buy.
Okay.
Okay. The support services of the company that helps us ensure the ongoing functionality of that system is what I'm describing here with this particular resolution.
Okay. At a later date, will we consider software that will better our connection for the Maru connection?
We are looking at that. The software that Mr. Pinkleton is talking about is the one that allows us to purchase equipment and commodities. So it's not the software that you are referring to. But of course, we are considering what you just mentioned as
we
well.
We need that, okay.
So did Mr. Pinkleton, did I hear an answer to the trustee's question about future purchases?
Yes.
You did hear the answer. Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions regarding the maintenance contract? May I have a motion to approve the resolution as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Abstain.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Pinkleton, if we'll move to the resolution regarding the College of Pharmacy tuition increase.
The College of Pharmacy would like to make a request of the Board of Trustees for the fiscal year 16 time period to increase their tuition rate by 1.5%. This is consistent with the dean's vision for the development of funding in the foreseeable future for the college, and will contribute to the ongoing support and enhancement of the College of Pharmacy programs. Are there any questions concerning this request?
Hearing none, may I have a motion to adopt the resolution as presented?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Mr. Pinkleton, please talk to us about the tuition increase fall 2015 resolution.
The third resolution we'd like to bring to the attention of the board for your consideration is for tuition and fees that will affect the graduate and the EDDL students on our campus. We've endeavored to establish what we refer to as an appropriate differential between the undergraduate rate, the graduate rate, and the EDDL program. In layman's terms, a differential simply means the dollars that are that separate an undergraduate from a undergraduate rate from a graduate rate and from a graduate rate from the doctoral program. And so what we've attempted to do is to put the appropriate level of separation between those three levels of students on campus. And so this 1.5% is an attempt to further distinguish the actual credit hour rate that is associated with an undergraduate student, a graduate student, and a doctoral student.
And this is for fall 2015?
That is correct. That is correct. Are there any questions concerning this resolution?
Hearing none, may I have a motion to adopt the resolution as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Mr. Pinkleton, if you'll move on to the fiscal year 2016 tuition and fee waiver budget resolution.
The fourth resolution for the Board of Trustees consideration this morning deals with tuition and fee waiver budget. We have a request before you that totals $1.9 million. This is consistent with our fiscal year 15 budget, and so we're asking you to, in essence, re-up the commitment that the university has made for tuition waivers. As we think about this particular request, I'd also like to share with the Board of Trustees that the university has been very mindful in the fiscal year 16 planning process of the financial condition that affects our students. And in direct response to that, we have made a commitment for the fiscal year 16 planning period to hold the undergraduate tuition rate constant. Again, repeating that, holding the fiscal year 16 undergraduate rate constant. And so that's a very significant statement in the face of a state appropriation that in all likelihood will be less in fiscal year 16 than what it is in fiscal year, what it is currently in fiscal year 15. And so we're trying to achieve that delicate balance of continuing to motivate students to pursue higher education, select Chicago State as the institution of choice for their degree, but yet continue to be mindful of the financial condition of this university. Are there any questions concerning this resolution?
Who receives these tuition waivers?
The tuition waivers are received by, there's a number of different classifications. An example, we define the tuition waivers between a discretionary and a non-discretionary. As an example, the non-discretionary waiver, an example would be directed at the senior citizen population. There's a state mandate that allows for senior citizens to come to any state institution, and if they pass the appropriate criterion, which revolves around income, residency, and a couple other criterion, and they obviously meet the age threshold, then they are able to pursue their education at a university. Currently, there are no restrictions on the number of credit hours that a senior citizen can take once they pass all the admission requirements. And so the cost associated with that tuition is officially waived because the student does not pay for it. And so that's one example of a non-discretionary tuition waiver that is included in this $1.9 million request.
Could you give us an example of a discretionary tuition waiver?
Of a discretionary tuition waiver. We have merit awards, merit scholarships, merit waivers that are given to individuals that qualify. Merit in the context of their GPA, their academic performance. If they achieve a particular level, then they are awarded a waiver.
I have a hard time distinguishing between a scholarship and a waiver.
And a merit.
Right. I know some of our students, because of their academic success, receive scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between this? I know the result is the same.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay the tuition and fees. But why is something classified as a scholarship and something else classified as a waiver?
Well, in large part, it depends on the accounting treatment that's associated with the particular issue. A scholarship is considered an expense to the university. A tuition waiver is a reduction in revenue. Okay, and so as an example, when we receive a mandate from the state, okay, more often than not, that's considered as a waiver. Okay, and so in terms of how it affects the university's financials, it's considered a reduction in revenue, thus a tuition waiver. Tuition is revenue, a tuition waiver is a reduction in revenue. The flip side of that is expense. A scholarship is considered an expense. And so when the athletics department, as an example, awards a scholarship to an athlete, that's an expense that we have to pay for. It for all intents and purposes, affects the university in terms of the bottom line, almost identical, but the accounting treatment governs which way we classify it as whether it's a waiver or a scholarship.
And so which would we prefer with the same result?
I don't think it's not a matter of preference. No.
I would say a scholarship.
And why would you say that?
I would say a scholarship reduces.
A waiver reduces our revenue. Mm-hmm. And a scholarship
shows that we are.
Yeah, supported. We get support from scholarships. So we said in our foundation we want to focus on scholarship enhancement and raising more funds. And so that helps our bottom line. I do want to say when you ask about waivers, who do they support? They support our students. So the Honors College is supported through these waivers, as well as we have the mandate, as the VP stated, that all employees in the state of Illinois, it's a benefit to go to school and receive 6 hours. You can receive 6 hours every semester. And so we can't refuse that. They have to maintain a 3.0 GPA. And so we have a lot of employees who do take advantage of that benefit. We also have our veterans benefits. So there are some things that we don't control. We also have employees of the university who have been employees for 7 years. Their students, their children can go to school at a 50% rate at any state university. Many of them take advantage of that at Chicago State University. So really, what we do is we present this waiver budget because we budget for all of these expenses so that we won't be surprised with the expenses. I hope that helps.
It does. Thank you.
Any other questions concerning the tuition waiver budget?
What's the percentage of this budget that we would consider discretionary waivers?
The percentage of the budget, of the waiver budget that's considered discretionary? Approximately 15 to 20%. It's a fairly small amount.
And the rest of them?
Non-discretionary. 80. That's correct.
Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the resolution as presented?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Mr. Pinkleton, as we move on, we're looking at the mandatory fee increase fall 2015 resolution, and that was not covered in the tuition increase fall 2015 resolution?
It was not.
Okay. Please tell us the difference.
The final resolution for the board's consideration today is for mandatory fees specifically directed at the athletics operation in addition to information technology. This is a fee. The previous resolution was directed at tuition.
Okay.
Okay. And so a different aspect of the university's revenue stream, and so we need to consider it separately. The first component that is a part of this mandatory fee request, again, deals with the athletics operation. We are, in fact, making a request to increase the rate by $52.50 to a total of $308.50. This will continue to support the university's ongoing affiliation with the WAC, which is a Division I conference, which the university's leadership is committed to maintaining, in addition to helping the university respond to the challenges of being a Division I participant, which includes a minimum number of sports that are required. We've just recently added the soccer to the institution's sport base, and so we need to continue to develop the appropriate amount of funding that will support our affiliation, and this is one attempt to continue to provide the appropriate resources to the athletics department that will allow participation in the WAC going forward.
Mr. Pinkleton, this may or may not be the appropriate time, but I would like for you, in case all of the board members don't know this, to just speak a little bit about the fact that students have been involved in all of these rate increases that we're asking for today and tuition increases and fee increases. Could you speak to that, please?
I can. The university has a process in place where we attempt to obtain feedback from all the key constituents across campus. We have a committee which is referred to as the Tuition and Fees Committee. It is made up of students, staff, and faculty. The intent of that committee is to give everybody a voice in hearing what the financial concerns are of the university and how we are bringing forth recommendations to address those financial concerns. It is very much an interactive process. It's not top-down by any means. There is perspective that is shared from everybody that is on the committee, and ultimately what comes out of the committee is a recommendation which is brought forth to senior leadership. And that recommendation is then debated by the operations team, endorsed eventually, hopefully, by the president. And to the extent that there's any changes in what comes out of the tuition and fee committee, then we go back and we go back to the drawing board and we start the process again. Okay. This year, as an enhancement to the tuition and fee committee, which deliberated per the normal part of our process, we also had a specific outreach to student government, to the Student Government Association, and where we met with seven or eight of the leaders of SGA and gave them a very specific opportunity to respond to the plan that was being brought forth for increases in tuition and fees and mandatory fees. And so as a consequence of that conversation, the university's leadership actually did make some adjustments, factoring in their input to modify the rate and the fees associated with some of these resolutions that we brought forth here today.
Including this one now.
That is correct.
So for example, with respect to the athletics, mm-hmm. As an administration or an administrative body, we were looking for a larger number.
That's correct.
But after meeting with the student government representatives, we agreed on the $52?
$52.5 increase.
$52.25 mm-hmm. increase. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd just like for that to be clear, because sometimes the students feel, here we go with another increase, but they themselves understand the necessity for it, and they also have input into what that number should be.
That's correct. The other aspect of this resolution for your consideration deals with the Information Technology Department. We are asking for an increase of $94.50 for information technology. This will again continue to the ongoing support of the campus's infrastructure for technology, in addition to helping us with smart classrooms and just improving the classroom experience for our students. Mr. Shindy, is Mr. Shindy here?
Good morning, Chairman and the trustees. As Mr. Pinkleton has indicated that we met with the student body with this resolution as well. The original proposal was to increase the student technology fee by $135. We met with the SGA and the student body in general, and they felt that it was a bit too high for them to adjust to this in 1 year. They came back to us asking for an increase of $94.50 instead of $135. The president approved, accepted their proposal, and that is why we are here. But along with their recommendations of an increase, they had some very specific suggestions on how they would like to see the additional revenue being used to improve the student experience. And specifically, they wanted to see, as the trustee has mentioned, internet speeds need to improve on campus, wireless and wired. We understand that, and we are working towards it. The second recommendation was to improve the printing infrastructure on campus. And we understand that, and it was one of the recommendations we had made to them, that this is what we can do if we increase the tuition fee. We have our student senator sitting here. He was part of the discussions, and this is the group that came back to us with approving an increase of $94.50.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Yes. Trustee Zoller, I have a question concerning athletics. Dr. Denisha Hendricks, concerning your fellowship with the NCAA schools that you're invited to play, like Notre Dame and Northwestern and Creighton, is there some type of funding that comes out of that fellowship that you have with those NCAA schools that invite you?
There are sometimes. Sometimes. Not all the time.
Okay,
so you don't have, and that would be called a game guarantee, and those are contractual, and that's a game-by-game, sport-by-sport, individualized contract that would be signed, because you don't have that within the conference.
Okay.
But for instance, this year, we played Notre Dame. We did receive a guarantee. We played some other institutions, such as Creighton, Arizona, you know, and we did receive a guarantee for those things. So that helps offset in terms of the non-appropriated funds. That's a contribution that we can go back to in terms of offsetting the non-appropriated funds. So that avenue is there, and it's working. And so that's something that, of course, will be continued as we move forward.
And as in the example for basketball, the travel squad for women and for men, what's the number again for the amount of travel squad?
Well, there's a minimum number. You have to have at least 14, 10. The number is 10.
Okay.
10 students to play a game.
NCAA Division I standard.
Correct. Okay. 10 to play a game. You can carry up to 25 on your roster, but in order to actually play a game, you need 10. Now, you know, we got five people on the court at any given time. You got to have a spare because things happen, right? So usually we travel around 12 to 14.
Okay. Depending upon the budget, right?
Depending upon the budget.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, very well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Pinkleton, will we be having two different resolutions, the mandatory fee increase and the network security?
Okay. Yes.
Then I would like to ask for a motion to adopt the mandatory fee increase fall 2015 resolution as presented.
A second.
Was there a?
I'm moved.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Now I'd like to ask for a motion to adopt the network security appliance resolution.
I so move.
Have we heard the resolution, Madam Chairman?
I think that we have, but it can be restated by Mr. Shindy.
The resolution we have is to improve our network security appliances. To give you some background, when the state auditors walk on campus, one of the first questions they ask IT is, how do you secure your confidential information? And the answer is, this is how we do it. The state auditors have been happy with the response so far. That's why we don't have any finding around loss of data. And we are not in the news, and we want to be that way. We don't want to be in the news for this reason. The equipment that we have in place today has been purchased more than 5 years ago, and the technology keeps changing. The resolution we have is to change the technology we have today and improve upon it to meet all the new requirements, at the same time increased network speeds. So the request is for $522,000 over a 5-year period. So it's about $104,000 per year.
Thank you. So I will ask now for a motion to adopt the network security appliance resolution.
So moved.
Thank you, Dr. Smith.
Trustee Hatch?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Thank you. If there are no further questions or comments, that is the end of the audit and finance report. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll have a facilities update. Trustee Smith?
Yes, Mr. Tracy Obershan will come and present to us the information and update.
Distinguished board members.
Good morning.
My name is Tracy Obershan, Director of Physical Facilities Planning and Management. A few noteworthy items that I would like to share with you all are in the area of capital development, starting with the electrical switchgear project. The following buildings have 45% of installation complete, which include the Education Building, BHS, and Harold Washington. These buildings were worked on over the winter break, and in that work, we replaced a number of aluminum wiring to copper, also replaced our low voltage distribution center, and also the master control center. The remaining work of these buildings, as well as William Science, Douglas Hall, Cook, JDC, are scheduled to be done between April and May. That will include taking down the building completely and doing a larger scope of work. And that the overall project is still scheduled to be complete June 9th. The Robinson University Center, the electrical work was 85 to 95% complete. The boiler insulation is about 65% complete. The roof work made it to 40%. They had to stop due to weather, and so that will resume when weather permits. The masonry work included grinding down the mortar. That got to a 45% completion, along with, and the next phase will be rebuilding the parapet wall and installing the new limestone seals. The child care project is moving right along. It is at 50% construction documents. So this is the point where we pretty much